Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Off Topic, Hot Topic, a bonus episode of the Hunting Seasons podcast. I'm Damask Leary.
I'm Broderick Gordis.
I am the danger.
Off Topic, Hot Topic.
That's whatever you were talking about for you.
Before we get into things, you should know that we love getting topic suggestions from our listeners. So if you would like to contribute a question, topic, or story to Off Topic, Hot Topic, you can do so by emailing us at contact@huntingseasonspodcast.com or tweeting us at HuntingSCast, just like listener GJ Corbin did. They submitted this story for us from Joe Otteson at Variety, the boys spin-off near series order at Amazon with Lizzie Broadway and Jazz Sinclair joining the cast. Damask, have you watched The Boys?
I have, yes. I've watched it all.
How do you feel about the idea of a spin-off of The Boys? Only after two seasons at this point. Third season is incoming.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of Amazon's, seems to be their premier show at the moment.
Mm.
I think the season two is apparently the best launch for a TV show they've ever had, basically.
Oh, cool.
Anything that's Amazon original anyway.
Yep. I wouldn't mind it. There's so much there to explore in the world. I think even in the primary story that we get in The Boys, there's some characters that I'm like, I wish you could just get rid of these people. But there's certain like political stuff going on, ideological stuff going on that is really interesting and fun. So if they can branch off and make something else in this world, I'd definitely check it out, that's for sure.
So apparently what this series is going to be about, set at America's only college exclusively for young adult superheroes, the Untitled series is described as an irreverent R-rated show that explores the lives of hormonal competitive supes as they put their physical, sexual, and moral boundaries to the test, competing for the best contracts in the best cities. How's that sound to you?
Arousing.
Sounds very interesting. Like a yeah. superhero version of like, I don't want to say the OC or something like that, but something along those lines.
I was thinking that. Or any of, you know, those shows like Are You the One?
Sure.
Or Love Island, that kind of thing. But they have superpowers. Yeah,
too
cool.
Hot to handle.
Yeah, I'm into
but
it.
But with superheroes.
Yep.
I think JJ sent that in because they've been watching The Boys recently and probably wants us to review it. And we probably should, really, because it's obviously a very popular show now. It's getting its third season and a spin-off soon.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably get to that one day. Thank you, JJ, for your submission. And if anybody else has any topics or stories like us to talk about, please contact us. We'd love to include them in a future off-topic, hot topic. In other headlines, Loki has a series premiere date on Disney Plus of June 11th. As you probably know by now, Falcon and the Winter Soldier premiered last week on March 19th. The Black Widow movie was just announced to be releasing in cinemas on Disney and on Disney Plus on the same day, on July 9th. That will be Disney Plus's premier access, where you pay an extra $30 or so for it.
Mm.
This is also true for the 101 Dalmatians live-action prequel Cruella, starring Emma Stone, on May 28th. It actually happens before Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
Curiously, Pixar's next movie, Luca, is going straight to Disney Plus at no extra cost, with no apparent theatrical release at all on June 18th.
Is that internationally?
Well, we don't know about Australia yet. In fact, friend of the show, Cam Williams, is trying to figure that out. But we're not hearing anything at this stage that's definitely releasing in theatres here. Certainly not in America. But it's weird.
I mean, I don't hate getting a free movie.
True. But
I would like to watch it at the cinema.
I would like to watch it at the cinemas. I'm quite excited about Luca.
Mm.
And like the reason I bring this stuff up is because Disney Plus is obviously relevant to us with TV and so forth. But now these movies keep coming our way via the streaming services as well. The Pixar's, this will be the third Pixar film in a row that's just gone straight to Disney Plus for free.
Mm.
And then these other movies, first were skipping theatrical release but had the premiere access thing, but now they're going to do both. I don't understand why the Pixar ones aren't. It's a very interesting situation.
So you don't have any theories?
There was a theory I heard might have something to do with the back end. The amount, because Pixar is kind of an offshoot of main Disney, right?
Mm-hmm.
That maybe there's something about the amount that Disney has to pay Pixar off ticket prices when they sell them at the when they go to the theater, basically.
Right.
And that by having them release and not charge them for it,
mm-hmm.
they don't have to pay Pixar that amount. But I don't. That seems like a shitty deal for Pixar. Why would that be something that Pixar's into? I don't. I have no idea.
Mm.
It's fascinating to me. This is happening. Anyway, in similar news, Paramount Plus has announced that films Mission Impossible 7 and A Quiet Place Part 2 will land on the streaming services 45 days after their theatrical release.
I'm so disinterested.
Sure. Mm. In those movies, sure.
Yeah.
But again, this is continuing a trend because Warner Brothers, who controversially has all their major films of 2021 releasing simultaneously in cinemas and on HBO Max, have indicated they will similarly go to a 45-day cinema to streaming gap in 2022. So it looks like the future is, no matter what, there is going to be a very short window between going to see a movie at the theater and watching on streaming, if there is one at all.
Yeah.
How does this feel to you? This seemed inevitable that the pandemic has sort of just fast-tracked this change. It's happening really quickly, though.
Yeah.
While it's things. How does this make you feel?
It's certainly making it so that going to the movies is something for people who you know, are film nerds or are going for the experience of sitting in that room and those speakers and blah, 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 mm-hmm. all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think 95% of people will just wait the 45 days and aren't, unless it's something they really love, but those people are generally nerds anyway, aren't going to be like going out of their way to pay blah, blah amount to go to the movies. Because like you say, it is like, it's kind of a shitty experience if anyone else is in that cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, going to the cinemas is not always the optimal experience. Again, a conversation that I saw Cam Williams having online yesterday that I pitched in a little bit. It's expensive if you go with multiple people. If you're a family, you know, in Australia, it costs you close to $80. That's before buying any food or anything like that at the cinema.
Yeah.
You aren't guaranteed to have a good time because who knows who's going to be around you with phones and stuff like that. People talking, people rustling bags, people, who knows what.
Mm.
Then you've got just whether the experience is going to be good at all. Theoretically, a cinema is meant to be the best experience because of the big picture and the big sound. But I've had times I've gone to the movies to see huge movies and they're out of focus. And it's like, if they can't even get the basics of showing me the film right, like, why am I paying a premium to go and see it that way? Plus, I have to hit that. It's not a convenient time, you know, whatever it might be. So I'm really worried about the future of cinema. Like cinemas as places that we go to see things.
Mm.
It feels like we might just be left with boutique cinemas that get, you know, access to films we might not otherwise see, sort of, you know, Oscar bait films or going to see, go to IMAX maybe to go and see like the latest Avengers film.
Mm.
But otherwise, you know, Mission Impossible 7's going to be out on streaming service. Am I going to go to the movies and see that?
I can imagine people paying like $80 to go to the opening night of, say, a big Avengers thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big special occasion. Sure. Everyone pays $80. That happens a few times a year. And then, yeah, you'll just have your Oscar movies in there.
I wonder also, like, the power of reviews are going to be more powerful than ever.
Mm.
Because if I know this thing's coming to streaming relatively soon, and the film is only middling, I'll just wait 45 days.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas I might have still gone to the movies with a friend or something like that, just as, you know, a reason to do it, even if it was a middling film, especially if I knew it was going to take a while, I might miss out on something. But unless the film is definitely exceptionally good, I can see myself waiting very frequently.
You can't justify spending like $25.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting change. Speaking of Paramount Plus, they had a huge series of announcements recently, just after we recorded our last off topic, actually, including they'll be hosting the Pablo Schreiber starring Halo series based on the Xbox series of games.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, it was announced for Showtime. That's going to Paramount Plus. The final season of Younger will be on Paramount Plus. I believe that is a Hilary Duff series. Is that right?
It certainly is. I've never been able to watch it.
Oh, really?
I've watched bits and pieces of it. But there's just not enough Hillary to compensate for the ridiculous plot.
They will be getting a new Star Trek animated show called Star Trek Prodigy. I don't know anything about that, but that's coming. Another Reno 911 revival, a Beavis and Butthead movie, a Workaholics movie, a 3D animated Rugrats revival featuring the original voice cast. How's that
sound?
Have
you seen clips of that?
Yes,
I have. It looks disgusting. Yeah.
I'm not super sold on that either. But most notable of all, a new Frasier series. So this is not, at least hasn't been announced as being like called Frasier, as in a reboot or a continuation of the 90s sitcom Frasier, but is about the same Kelsey Grammer character, Frasier Crane. My guess is it will be called Crane, and the last line of the finale will be, "Cheers, Frasier Crane," as they cheer him on and say the three titles of the three shows he's existed in, that character.
Brilliant, but, Brad.
Just put that prediction out there now. So yeah, in 10 years and that turns out to be true, you can all say Brad said it first.
Oh, wow. It's amazing that you think it's going to last 10 more years.
Yeah, 10 is probably unlikely. Any excitement for this? You're a fan of Frasier at all? I know you're not a fan of Kelsey Grammer.
No, I'm not. I haven't watched Frasier since it was airing on Australian television. As a 9-year-old child, I was unimpressed by it. And I have no desire to try and rewatch it, is how I feel about Frasier. Though I know, like, you and a bunch of the boys fucking love it.
And I saw someone... I'm not going to say I love it. I do like it well enough. I think it sits in a weird place where I used to, one of those shows that'd be on, there'd be like 3 or 4 episodes in a row on like after 10:30 at night. Mm-hmm. So when I'm in my bedroom, I've got access to my own television and I don't know, I'm a teenager, I don't want to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. I'd watch 4 episodes of Frasier in a row and have a little bit of a giggle at it. You know, it was funny enough to me at the time.
Amazing.
But I do, we have friends who adore that show. It's like their happy place, that show.
Yeah, no, not for me, but good for them.
I don't know how I feel about coming back. I'm not sure. I'd be fascinated to see what it looks like, how many of the characters are going to be returning characters, whether his brother, Niles, and I think that's right.
Yes.
And Daphne and those characters will be coming back or not.
Yeah.
Or whether it'll be a whole new thing. I think I've heard rumors the original pitch was he was going to move to another city and sort of restart again. Probably not be the radio host. Probably not relevant anymore. I'm thinking podcast.
Yeah.
I could definitely see podcast. Mm-hmm. That could definitely help. That happen.
Well, I'm having flashes to the Will and Grace, you know, they brought back.
Yes.
And they were doing, you know, pretty similar things than what they were doing back in the day. And it's just like a different landscape for television. So it feels, you're like, okay, this is fine. It's just like watching old Will and Grace. But do I really want to be dedicating my time to this type of TV anymore?
Sure.
Not so much.
I think also you just hit a point where you emotionally like might miss a show, but you've moved on.
Yeah.
And you like, it's a shame there wasn't more of this, but then do you really want
I'm more having to go now? Back, have a giggle at something that's older and be like, this is funny, but it's definitely a bit naff. Yeah, I don't need it updated. Thank you.
In very big news, Nickelodeon announced the launch of Avatar Studios, which will focus on the creation of content related to the world of Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra, with creators Michael DiMartino and Brian Konietzko at the helm. This news comes after Bryke stepped away from the Netflix live-action series remake of Avatar The Last Airbender on Netflix, as I said. The first project under Avatar Studios will be an animated theatrical movie that's set to begin production this year. What are your initial thoughts, Damask?
Oh, sucks to be Netflix. Because, like, the reason to watch their live-action Avatar was because, well, we're not getting anything new from that universe, and the creators are attached, so fuck yeah. The creators left, and I was like, well, I guess I'll probably check it out just so I have something in that world to watch. But now I don't need it at all. I can just wait for this new stuff to come out, which I'm very excited about. What are your initial thoughts, Brad?
It was so frustrating. We recorded our off-topic hot topic last time, and this news like the next day came out. So you're getting a cold take now because it's been a month since this news was announced. But my general thoughts are this is the best news that could possibly happen. There is nothing...
It's like Christmas for you.
There's nothing I want more than just more animated content from the world of Avatar. It appears that Avatar and Korra make it to Netflix got a huge revival, a massive boost in popularity and fandom, and that's been enough for Nickelodeon to say, yes, we want more of this, please. Idea of an animated theatrical movie, whether that is some tale retelling of the original series, which I hope it's not. I hope it's an extension of either Aang or Korra's story. It sounds excellent. Whether it's an Avatar 1 story, whether it's Kyoshi or Roku story, I don't care or know. I am in for whatever it is. And then that we're probably going to get another series out of this. Again, whether it's an extension, whether it's a story of a different Avatar from earlier or further into the future, whatever.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what the announcements are. That's going to be a fun day.
You could tell me anything. It's more Avatar. It's more Aang. Great, I'm in. More Korra. Yeah. Great, I'm in. It's got to do with this other Avatar. Great, I'm in. Literally anything. And it's an animated series or movie. I'm there.
Yeah.
This world is way too interesting and I'm way too invested to not, yeah. Fucking
yeah.
Yes. Yes, thank you. This is so much more exciting to me than the live action series had me excited that people who maybe weren't interested in watching an animated series would get to see this story, or it would help people to come around and watch the animated series and discover it that way, and that more people would just basically have eyes on Avatar.
Yeah.
Didn't need that. It just needed people to watch on Netflix, apparently. And now that that happened and this is the result, it is the best option. This series has always deserved more.
Very exciting.
I'm so happy for it. But it's a long way away yet. I'm not getting too excited.
I can't wait for more merch. Me too.
Like, I just want, I know there are like upper plushes out there, upper plushies out there, but I want to be able to walk in to like a Big W and buy an upper plushie.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got me an upper plushie.
Did I?
Yep. I packed it the other day. I was like, gave a little kiss and a cuddle, and I put it in a box.
I did that. Why didn't I get myself one? go into a Target and buy a shirt with Aang on it. Like, fucking.
Yes, please.
Yes. So that's very exciting. But it is a long way away, way away. I hope that this year we might hear at least what the movie is going to be. Just a title, basic outline of the plot, because that would be helpful. Some renewal announcements. Hulu has renewed the Animaniacs Revival series for a third season. It's only released season one so far. Season two is yet to air. Last month we discussed all of the CW shows that got renewed, which was basically all of them. We can now add to that list the just debuted Superman and Lois, which is now officially getting a season two as well, surprising no one. Other announcements. Party Down is getting a 6-part limited series revival 10 years after it originally ended.
I didn't know this.
Yes, Damask. Wow. I'm not sure it's an announcement. It is this is something they're working on, actively working on at this point.
Right.
But it seems pretty legit. Are you a big fan of Party Down?
I mean, I haven't watched it in years, but when I watched it, I was like, this show is fucking great. I really, really enjoy it. It's very funny. The cast, when you look back at the cast, you're just like, what? Well, it's incredible.
Yes.
That it ever happened. And sad that it was so short lived, but yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this.
Do you think, and so we just talked about the idea of like bringing back Friday show. Very different show.
This show was ahead of its time though.
Sure.
So I feel like now is actually a perfect time for it to exist.
Absolutely. I've only seen the pilot. I quite liked it. Yeah. I will definitely get around to watching the rest of it before the new season comes out, whenever that is.
Mm.
Peacock has given a straight to series 10 episode order to Poker Face, an hour-long mystery drama created by The Last Jedi and Knives Out director Rian Johnson and starring Natasha Lyonne.
What's it about?
We don't really know. He has said Johnson will serve as the creator and writer and director of Poker Face. He describes it as a type of fun, character-driven case-of-the-week mystery that he grew up with.
I mean, I love them both, so I'll definitely fucking watch it without a doubt.
Yeah. That's super exciting. He's never, I mean, he has directed TV, but he's never been a creator behind television before.
Yep.
He's directed some incredible episodes of Breaking Bad, most notably Ozymandias, possibly the best episode of television ever created. And so this is super exciting to me, and I love Natasha Lyonne.
Yes.
So, you know, count me in on that.
Yeah, I can't really imagine it being bad, but who knows?
Yeah, like Knives Out proved that he can do sort of like a murder mystery type thing quite interestingly. I'd be interested to see his take on, he has a way of deconstructing or approaching genres from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So while I'm sure he will lean into the fun of like a Columbo or a Murder, She Wrote type thing as well, I can also see him doing something a bit fun and different with that concept too, and finding a way to flip it on its head. I mean, let's do it.
I think it's exciting.
Poker Face. Must keep an eye out for that. HBO has announced 3 more Game of Thrones spin-off series, joining the already announced House of the Dragon and Tales of Dunk and Egg are Sea Snake, Flea Bottom, and 10,000 Ships. How do you feel about the announcement? There are now 5 HBO, 5 Game of Thrones spin-offs coming to HBO.
I am shocked. Shocked by this. Do we know anything about like showrunners or?
Not a lot's been announced. I think there was someone attached to Sea Snake, but Flea Bottom and 1,000 Ships don't have anybody attached to them creatively at this point.
Right. So I've got 2 thoughts. So on one hand, I just think of how much that brand has been tarnished and diminished in the last few years.
Yeah.
That to continue to invest money in that is a big risk that I'm surprised that they are willing to take. But I also recognize the reason for that brand being in the toilet. Sorry, that's my little dog pill. That brand being in the toilet is because the last showrunners did such a poor job towards the tail end. So that's not to say that shows within this world can't be really good and won't have people tuning in week to week, because I think there's certainly a possibility for that.
That's kind of where I'm at. It's like I don't think these shows can't be good shows, can't be quality television.
I'm just shocked that HBO is willing to expand that much.
It seems like HBO is looking to try and recapture, you know, what made that show so popular, because it was so big for them in doing so. And investing in it like it's the MCU with all these spin-offs, but I don't know if they understand why it was working when it was. I think they're getting way ahead of themselves.
Yes.
Seems like a massive mistake to me, because I'm the same as you. It's incredible how little since the finale, how little of a cultural impact, or how quickly its cultural impact just disappeared. Mm-hmm. You know what I don't hear people say anymore? Winter is coming. Or like anything like that, you know? Occasionally you'll get a little like Vala Magul. I don't know, but one point in time, it was captured everyone's collective consciousness.
The amount of Game of Thrones t-shirts walking around.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
And it has just plummeted. And if the show had a successful ending, that wouldn't have happened. There would have been all these ideas of rewatches and like going back through it, and things would have stayed alive with the show afterwards, but it had such a crappy ending, it just like evaporated. It's quite incredible how
I guess it depends if they're who they're willing to give the opportunities of show running something like that, and where their focus is going to be, those showrunners, whether it's going to be in character or big action sequences. I'll be honest, 10,000 Ships, not promising in my mind.
In some casting news, we were speaking of Natasha Lyonne earlier. Schitt's Creek star Annie Murphy is joining the cast of Russian Doll Season 2, which I believe is currently in production.
So excited for that, yeah.
Russian Doll Season 2, just in general, I'm excited for. Annie Murphy joining, though, that excites you?
Yeah, I think I'm in love with her. I thought about it, I am.
You've thought about it now?
Yeah.
Took you 2 seconds to decide. Eddie Falco of The Sopranos fame has been cast as Hillary Clinton in Impeachment, American Crime Story. How do you feel about that casting?
She's way too old.
That's how they cast it.
For the impeachment?
Yeah. Yeah.
Back in the 90s?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a Ryan Murphy show. Anything goes.
That's true. They'll just slap a wig on her and be like, there you go.
Yep.
You're done.
That's exactly what I'll be.
Classic. Listen, Ryan Murphy.
She's a great actress, so I am...
Oh, I've no doubt the performance is going to be great, but that just seems...
Alongside Clive strange. Owen, I believe. Clive Owen was the one who was cast as...
Maybe I'm thinking Edie Falco is older than she is.
How old was she in The Sopranos?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe
like,
she was...
I feel like she was probably Hillary Clinton's age approximately when she was doing The Sopranos as... Like, as old as she was, Hillary Clinton at the time. You going to do a live check for me?
So, she's 57 years old.
How old is Hillary Clinton now?
Now? Let me find out. Let me Google.
57 years old. So, 20 years earlier, she would have been 37 when she was doing...
Oh. Okay. Not off, actually.
Oh, okay.
So, I guess Hillary just looked really good. So, Hillary's 73. So, she would have been... Yeah.
Okay. In the ballpark. Within 10 years.
Yes, within 10 years.
Okay. We'll take it. We'll give them that.
All right.
Wallace Day has been cast as the new Kate Kane in the CW's Batwoman, replacing Ruby Rose. This is after Javicia Leslie joined the show as the new Batwoman, Ryan Wilder. So you were watching Batwoman for a while there.
I watched maybe 2 or 3 episodes, yeah.
It's more than me. How do you feel about this news? They're recasting Ruby Rose's character of Kate Kane.
How do I feel about it? Well, because you sent me the article.
I did.
Because the showrunner was like, oh, you know, I'm cognizant of the fact that I don't want to fall into like the bury your gaze thing.
Which so, I think is very, it's good to be aware of
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it's the bare minimum. Yes. And so she didn't want to write that Kate Kane died.
Yeah.
Great stuff. I then went on to read the plot of what was happening
spoilers
in the show.
Spoilers for Batwoman, who anyone...
I'm not going to reveal it.
I would like you to. I'm going to say spoilers for Batwoman. Skip ahead 1 minute if you don't want to hear
it. Yeah, the beginning of season 2. Yeah. And I didn't watch it. It's just what I read in the article. So Kate Kane is, I believe, in a plane crash at the beginning of season 2 and is so horribly disfigured. You first see her all wrapped up in bandages and then she is revealed, I guess the bandages are taken off and she has a new face, which I'm sure a lot of you will recognize from things like Days of
Our Lives
and Bold and Beautiful. And I was like, that has confirmed to me that this show is a hot fucking mess, which I will never watch again.
I'm glad they are recasting, though. I think that's better than, as you said, just killing off the character. Yeah. I don't think it needs a huge plot contrivance to explain it. Just recast. Mm-hmm. Just say, I'm back from being away for a while.
Yeah. Or like, I don't know, a phone call.
Yeah, that'll do. In a massive shock to absolutely no one at all, Evan Peters is set to star in Ryan Murphy's upcoming series Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story. Mm. Who would have picked he would be cast in that?
I think Evan Peters is so talented. What do you think Ryan Murphy is using to blackmail him to continue to work in his stuff?
A paycheck.
Oh, money.
Money, yeah.
The classic blackmail.
I think it's bribery rather than blackmail.
Yes. Look, I can see him as Jeffrey Dahmer, but that's only because almost everything I've seen him in is Ryan Murphy stuff, and he plays a terrifying serial killer. So it's perfect casting.
He must. It's possible he just enjoys being able to just let loose too. Like he's in a Ryan Murphy. Anything you get to really like have a go at the scenery, like
camp it up,
sink your teeth
That's
in.
That's true. I don't know. Like it was so nice to see him in. I'm not going to say other stuff recently. It was nice to see him in other stuff recently.
Well played.
Where he was. Thank you. Where he's doing something different. I liked
but
the
but he was having fun in that too.
He was. Like, I liked the levity in that situation.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just want him to have enough time to go out and make some movies that'll get him a couple of Oscars because I think he's fabulous.
Sure. In cancellation talk, and actually related to Evan Peters, now they see this as well, Pose is set to end after its upcoming third season on FX. Its final season will premiere on May 2nd, so that's coming up quite soon. Mm-hmm. That's sad. Canadian comedy Kim's Convenience is ending after its upcoming fifth season. After series creators Inns Choi and Kevin White decide to move on to new projects, Kim's Convenience was originally renewed for a sixth season. So it's interesting that they've now the creators are moving on, the studio has just sort of said, well, without them, we don't want to continue trying to make it. So we're not giving you a sixth season. Sucks for the crew and the actors, though. Mm. Like, they thought they had a job lined up for, going forward. It kind of sucks that's being dropped on them all of a sudden. So that's a shame. Have you ever watched Kim's Convenience? It is on Netflix here, I believe.
No, I haven't.
I see little clips here and there. People will post things on Twitter and stuff. Mm. And it looks quite good. I've been meaning to give it a go. Good. Seems good vibes. Good vibes. Killing Eve's upcoming fourth season, scheduled for 2022, will be its last. Mm.
Well,
go on.
Well, we've discussed this previously. Because we had decided never to review Killing Eve again. Mm-hmm. As listeners of the podcast will know, I loved season 1. Season 2, I was like, there's still hope. I was so young, so naive. Because you were like, it's over, Demath. I was like, no, it'll be fine. We watched season 3 and yes, my heart did break because I realized the show had turned to absolute shit. And at that point, we'd both been too burnt. But now that they've revealed that season 4 will be its last, we had a little chat, and I think we've decided that we've got to complete it.
We may as well.
We've got to complete the series. So we're going to review season 4. So which I think will be fun. Endings, even if it's terrible.
Endings always fascinate me. And knowing, I am relieved a little bit considering where they ended last season to know it's not going to drag on much longer, because I honestly don't think you could.
No.
It's got to reach a conclusion relatively soon. Otherwise, yeah, it's going to turn to it's already a mess, that show. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll come back for season 4. Hey, that's not until 2022 anyway. So, we'll wait a while. Yeah. However, you should know, representatives for AMC did say that they are working to develop a number of potential spin-off ideas to extend the show's iconic universe.
Iconic universe of these two characters that are the only ones of note in this otherwise normal world.
Well, the other stuff around it makes no fucking sense.
I don't understand what they mean by universe. Explained. What are they talking about?
I guess they're talking about what's the group called? The 12 or whatever it is? Other assassins? I don't know.
Ah, the rich universe of assassins.
The stuff that they haven't explained at all with
don't
any...
Don't they understand that killing Eve is just for, like, horny queer women?
Yeah, they don't. They don't understand. They missed the point. This is the problem. You can tell because of how they did season 2 and 3. They don't understand what the appeal of their own show was.
Yeah.
Fair. In other news, Netflix reality shows The Circle and Too Hot to Handle are releasing weekly rather than all at once in their second seasons. This isn't that crazy for Netflix. Some shows from other networks do release weekly already. I think Rick and Morty was releasing weekly at one point in Australia. And The Circle season 1 did this as well. But is this the tide turning for the binge model for Netflix?
I think it'll still depend on the type of show and the type of conversations they probably want to have. When you told me this, I remember thinking, like, well, the most fun I have on Twitter is usually after watching a reality TV episode. So I'll go on after Married at First Sight. I'll go on after The Bachelor or Bachelorette.
Yep.
And just enjoy the conversation, the people just being mocked incessantly. So for reality TV shows, I think it's really smart.
Yeah, see, I see it as, because I'm not someone who watches reality TV shows that much, but how successfully it's worked for Disney with The Mandalorian.
For the same reasons WandaVision, as well, isn't it? Yeah.
Right? The discussion, and it takes over the cultural zeitgeist for however long that series run is.
It's such a relief to know once you've caught up with that week's episode, you're not going to be spoiled.
Yeah.
You're just going in and you have as much information as everyone else and you can participate.
So my plea to Netflix is do the same thing with Stranger Things season 4.
I think that's smart.
Because that's a show that it seems like season 1 was like, the thing about season 1 that was fun, right, is people discovering it. No one expected it to be good or even realized it was coming. And then in a very slow year of summer blockbusters in the States, this thing just grabbed everyone's attention. We all got to it bit by bit. And then the conversation evolved from there. So it had a really great one that first season. And the second season came out. It was kind of not as good. It disappeared. I don't remember really anyone talking about the third season apart from the Neverending Story song. In the last episode.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it didn't really get discussed that widely. Mm. Not like season 1
was. Neverending Story and then like the queer thing. And that was it. Yeah.
And then otherwise, my worry for that show is it's a show that could really do well with a weekly release. Mm-hmm. Because people will talk about the ongoing mystery. And
yes,
the, like,
you're 100% right.
It could work the same way that a WandaVision did. And that they are just... It might just slip under the radar and sort of disappear if it comes out, season 4 comes out and no one's really paying attention.
Well, I think, like, when Stranger Things came out, particularly in Australia, though I think this is true worldwide, there was certainly less must-watch bingeable shows. And so I remember when Stranger Things came out, we were living together and we just popped it on your TV and we just, I think, almost watched the whole thing in one night. Because it's like you had to. That need to have to watch something so then you can talk about it the next day, I think, is lessening just because by the sheer amount of stuff out there, it's not possible to really do that.
Yep.
So if you want to create that crazy buzz, I think you do need to release week to week.
Yeah. I can imagine that they should do it. I just wonder if anyone's brave enough to do it at Netflix. Mm. They just haven't done it that way with any of their scripted stuff. WandaVision head writer Jack Schaefer revealed that she didn't intend for it to be announced that Tarina Paris was playing Monica Rambeau, and they would have been a big reveal moment in the show rather than something we all kind of knew thanks to casting and announcements and trailers.
Mm.
I thought that was interesting because you do think about the way her character is sort of introduced in episode 2, mm-hmm. then stuff that happens in episode 3, and then especially what happens at the start of episode 4, yeah. that... if we didn't know some of the information beforehand, then those reveals would have been extremely cool
that
as they
so
happened.
True.
They,
yes.
in fact, were still cool the way yeah. they were, but they would have hit even harder. And it makes me think about, because it did feel like, I'm trying to avoid any spoilers here, by episode 4, episode 5 is when things really started to hit, mm. because that's when most of the mystery was happening, yeah. or things we didn't know were coming started to come. Those first 3 episodes would have been way cooler with a little bit more, oh my God, what the fuck?
Yes.
Oh,
that's a shame.
Yeah, I think the trailers, I understand the need to show a little bit to hook people in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just showing the sitcom stuff probably wouldn't have been enough
mm-hmm.
for a lot of people. But boy, if you'd somehow avoid those trailers and cast announcements and stuff, that was big stuff. Anyway, finally, NPR's Planet Money did an analysis on the living standards of the Simpsons, which when it premiered 30 years ago was meant to represent the American middle class, and determined that due to inflation, healthcare, housing, and etc., and Homer being the only breadwinner for a family of 3 children, is basically unattainable in America today. Their current lifestyle on his salary in yeah. their sort of house where they live mm. is basically not attainable anymore.
Well, I would like to know how much he would need to make in order to.
So they did an analysis that he would, on current day salary earnings, he'd be earning about $50,000 a year.
Yes. But how much does he need to make?
I didn't read that far into it.
I would like to see that.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know that as well. But I think theoretically Marge would have to be working as well.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Mm. Just because, like, idea. You know, all the people about, you know, traditional family values and stuff, it costs so much fucking money to do that. Not that I don't think anyone really wants to. But it's, yeah, it's unattainable. It's absurd, but good for them. What a great use of their time.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Damask, what have you been watching?
Oh, a shit ton of reality shows, bro. So it's time for reality check. Brilliant theme song. So first up, first priority is RuPaul's Drag Race UK.
Okay.
Which had its finale last week.
Oh.
So spoilers. Skip ahead if you don't want spoilers for Drag Race.
This is season UK, two, correct?
Season two, that's it. Now, I wrote this immediately after I watched the finale. So I wrote, I need to preface this by saying I am not hating on any queen, and I'm truly not. Bless them all. But I also need to acknowledge my heart, body, and spirit when I say Bimini Bon Boulash was fucking robbed. As you know, they had to stop mid-production because of COVID, hit the UK really, really hard. I think the queens were gone for like 7 weeks. And then they came back. And when they did, Bimini won 4 out of 5 episodes.
Right.
So she's fucking killing it, which was a great kind of arc for her, because at the beginning, the first episode, she had to lip sync for her life, which means she was on the bottom two. And then the weeks went by, she got a little bit better and a little bit better. And then after lockdown, she was fucking killing it. Like, she'd stepped up her game so, so much. On the show, her fashion was out of this world. It was so beautifully constructed, editorial, and goddamn breathtaking. If you're able to look at any of the photos of her outfits during this season, just like undeniably the fucking best. She's a non-binary queen that had a quiet confidence that was fucking inspirational. It just made zero sense that she didn't win. Zero. Like, when the episode finished, I was beside myself. And I don't want to live in a world that doesn't crown Bimini. Even the way that the last episode was edited made you believe that she would win.
Oh, okay.
She got, like, you know, a few more talking heads. They really kind of followed her journey really well. In terms of, yeah, starting from the bottom and how she's kind of pushed herself, which is what the competition really is about. It's like, you know, in how many different ways can you be the best and push yourself and improve and be an inspiration to others, which I don't think you can deny that out of all the queens, she did that the best, but she didn't win. And I'm really upset about it. Yeah.
How I know you're not hating on any queens here, but how did you feel about the winner? Were they deserving in their own
Lawrence way?
Yeah,
Lawrence Chaney is really, really good. So at the before lockdown, he was winning a shit ton of stuff. I think at the end, Bimini, I think she might have had, she had 4 wins and Lawrence had 3.
Right.
And he's really good. He's really funny. I don't love his fashion, but I guess that's a personal taste thing. He had less of a journey, in fact. I think as the season went on, you see a different side to Lawrence that I think is less regal as you'd want from a drag queen, which was a shame.
So that's what I find interesting. Is this a failure of the show to create or present the story that makes sense?
I mean, looking at it, I think during production, Lawrence Chaney was perceived to be like a real fan favorite, like as filming was happening. It kind of seems like the editors and in post-production, they realized that perhaps may not be the case.
Right.
So I feel like you get this result because Rue clearly thinks Lauren Chaney is his favorite and is probably going to be the fan favorite.
Yep.
Lawrence Chaney wins, who did great work. He really did. But the story that the show is giving us is really different, which is confusing as an audience member.
That's where I think where the edit they've stuffed up.
Yeah.
They should if they know what the ending's going to be, then edit to that story so you don't come away feeling like...
It should feel satisfying it makes sense.
It almost sounds like it felt like a little bit of a bait and switch to you because you felt like the way the show was editing it, they were telling you what to expect.
I think so.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was a shame, but I will say I still think it's one of the best seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race, both US and UK. So, definitely check it out if you don't mind knowing who wins.
What else have you been watching?
Oh, Real Housewives of Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always enjoyed Dallas, not as much as a few of my faves, but that's because it's kind of one of the newer franchises. But this year, it's a real shame because they've introduced a new character, a new housewife, Tiffany, who's wonderful. Tiffany Moon's her name. She's a doctor. She's incredibly accomplished. She's hilarious. All the things, and she doesn't mind a bit of a confrontation, all the things you want in a housewife. Unfortunately, they brought her in because an old housewife, the summer before shooting started or whatever, there was a video found of her or was released of her making fun of Asians or making fun of her own eyes and her own eye shape
right.
by making fun of Asian people.
Right.
Tiffany Moon is an Asian woman. They brought her on as kind of a conduit for this other character, Brandy, to relieve her white guilt,
yeah.
which is like not fucking Tiffany's responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad now that the season is going on, Tiffany is kind of expressing that, being like, well, I'm not really here to make you feel good about yourself. That's actually my job. But I just want Brandy to go away. Like, she used to be really fun, but now it's just like white guilt tears of right. just being like, oh, you know, cancel culture is really hard. I've been through a lot. I've learned so much through this experience, but it has been really hard. I was like, for fuck's sake, you're still centering yourself
yeah.
in this moment in which you have affected people in a really negative way, but it's still all about how it has made you feel.
Are the words cancel culture is really hard actually sort of said, implied, like the words cancel culture?
No, everyone's just talking about what a difficult time she's having.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just have a hard time with that concept when you're on a fucking television show.
Yeah. Yep, yep, yep.
Anything else?
There has been a video released recently of Brandy's husband. Don't want to go into too many details, but I will say her husband is a fuckwit. He's a piece of shit. You've got kids, dude. Have some fucking self-respect and respect for your family. You're a piece of shit. So in that way, I feel bad for Brandy, but also she needs to get off the TV.
Okay. Yep.
Do you want me to go to my next Real
please,
Housewives?
Please,
If you don't like reality TV, just skip for, I don't know, a solid 15. So Real Housewives of New Jersey is back, baby. Now, I have loved New Jersey since its first season. Like, it had a fantastic first season. But I've been thinking, why am I still watching this franchise? Because it's in no way enjoyable and has not been for years. Like, for so long, it was really circular. You had a sister and brother family, like, fighting. So then you move on from this in-law fighting and then it just gets really depressing because then everyone just starts going to jail for, like, tax fraud.
Oh, shit.
And then you just see, like, their kids crying on this reality TV show and it's just way too fucking dark. So I haven't liked it for a long time. However, I do enjoy, and I think it is a reason to, if people like me and dropped off, to start watching again, simply for Margaret, who is an incredible addition, has been for the last few years. She gives some of the best talking heads in the biz. She's funny. She's over the top. She feels, you know, her own fabulousness every day. She's got a bizarre but fascinating relationship with her mother and she has no problem standing up for herself, which I like. She's a really good asset for the show. Great bit of comedy. She also sparks some conflict. That's what we want. And same goes for Jennifer, who is someone who, as a person, I find to be truly disgusting. Like, just the worst of the worst. Pure privilege. Unkind to her core in a lot of ways, will try to glass a bitch at the drop of a hat. I think she's tried to stab someone with a glass maybe 3 times.
Wow.
Like, she's really into it. And you got to have your hobbies, I suppose. But she is really funny and, yes, creates good conflict. But also something that's really important, and I don't think a lot of housewives realize this, is it's great to start conflict and to milk it for all it's worth. What you don't want to do is make it a 15-episode arc because it's really boring.
Yeah.
And so many of them do this. You need conflict for 3 episodes top stops. Then you move on. You look good for moving on. You sit back for a couple episodes and then maybe start another conflict again.
Do you think they're all that conscious of what they're doing?
Like, no, but the people producing them should be.
Sure.
Yeah, they should be getting better advice, I think, from producers just to keep things fresh. But I'm hoping that we'll move further and further away from the Giudices and the Gorgas and more into this new blood.
That's incredible names.
Yeah. Well, funny thing about the Giudices is that the first few seasons they were the Giudices.
Yep.
And then they decided they wanted to really embrace their Italian heritage and then became Giudice.
Giudice.
And lovely. Then after all the, you know, going to jail stuff, just went back to the simple Giudice. Yep. So there you go. Bit of family history. So the next one is, now it hasn't started yet, but I'm so excited because other than Atlanta, New York is my fave franchise of Real Housewives. Season hasn't started yet, but the season 13 trailer dropped yesterday or maybe a few days ago from when you're listening to this. Oh, can I say it got me rock fucking hard. We have a new cast member. Her name is Ebony. I think she's going to be fucking great. Looks like she can stand up for herself. She seems highly intelligent, which I think compared to a lot of the other women in New York, namely really two of them, that can be really confronting to have someone with a rational mind try to argue against someone who is off the fucking wall.
Sure.
So that'll be really fun. In fact, we saw a clip of that exact situation where the new housewife, Ebony, was fighting with famously unhinged Ramona. Just the most bizarre person I've ever seen on any television show ever. They're having a conversation. Ramona refers to her staff as the help. Ebony takes issue with that. Fair enough. Things escalate. And then it must be further down the road. They have another discussion in which Ebony tries to tell Ramona that she's actually gaslighting her, mm-hmm. which is exactly how Ramona fights. To which Ramona responds, "No, actually, I think you're fine. You're gaslighting me," which I thought was just gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. We also have the return of Heather, which is one of my favorite housewives ever. Well, she's never created her own conflict. She gives really good talking heads, which is another staple you need in every single franchise. Sure. You need someone to be able to, you know, be the people's voice, which is exciting because last season they brought in Leah, who became that person. So now we've got two people kind of competing for that role, and I think they're going to have out. Because Leah was really popular last season. And when that happens on your first season and you become a fan favorite, every single time you become a monster. You walk into every scene thinking the audience is going to have your back, which makes you feel like you can do anything. And I think that's going to happen this time. So I have a prediction that Leah will become somewhat of a villain in season 13.
Do they talk on the show about how they're being perceived by the public?
No, it's only ever, which is what makes it really good, only ever on the reunions.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. So when they're on the actual show as they're being filmed, you will never see them acknowledge that they are being filmed.
Gotcha.
Except for if they're having a breakdown or something really serious is happening, and that feels really exciting. Like when Lou found out that her fiancé was cheating on her, which is one of the best episodes of Real Housewives history. It's so good. That's when she like slams the door on them and acknowledges that the camera is there.
Right.
Which has an audience and you're like, oh, I'm part of this. I am part of this.
It's getting real.
Yeah, it's getting real, man. Real Housewives. Yeah. Generally not. And that's why the reunion is really good because then they can take a step back and then reflect and kind of pick apart all these type moving factors that are actually there in the room, but they're not allowed to talk about. What else have we got? Oh, the only sad thing is that in the trailer, we once again see Sonia Morgan, who was such a beautiful character. She's like this, you know, old school socialite, would come in with like a champagne and just have fun, liven up any room. The past few seasons, she has been spiraling into like severe substance abuse issues, I think is probably fair to say. Drunk in every scene. I think probably mixing pills and alcohol. So it's that level of drunkenness.
Right.
Yeah. And I just don't want to see it anymore. It's just a bit sad at this point. I don't mind seeing one season, then they get help and then they go on a journey. I'm all about that. Lou, the Countess, did that a few seasons ago. I love when I say some of these things and your eyes just go, what the fuck? I like that. But Sonya's been doing this for like 3 or 4 seasons. So it's just a genuine problem. Sad now. Yeah. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to Real Housewives of New York coming back. Next up on the list is not a reality show.
Oh my goodness.
I know, I've really branched
reality
out.
Reality check is over. Checking out.
Brilliant, Brad. You have nailed that one. And it is Soul Opposites. So this is the animated series created by Justin Roiland, who also co-created Rick and Morty, mm-hmm. and also Mike McMahon, who wrote and produced on Rick and Morty.
Cool.
And this show very much feels a part of that universe.
Yeah.
You watch it and it feels familiar. You're like, okay, this is, I don't know, like a sequel series or something like that. So not only does it feel that way, but we also have a set of characters who have scientific capabilities beyond what is found on Earth.
Right.
So yes. It's kind of, yeah, these people can, well, these aliens can mess around with things the way that those around them simply can't.
Yep.
And they have a lot of fun playing around with it, but oftentimes at the expense of their neighbors, their colleagues, all that fun stuff.
The human race in general. Yeah. Sure.
I've watched the first 6 episodes and I thought that was it, but you're telling me it comes out week to
week.
Well,
yeah, it was coming out week to week, though now you've said that, I've seen some articles recently that made me think that maybe that was season one and there's going to be, but there's definitely more coming, I get the feeling.
Right. Yeah. Well, I started watching it. I think it was late one night. I was very stressed. I was like, oh, I don't know what to watch. So I popped on Soul Opposites, not actually knowing that it was Justin Roiland at all. Mm-hmm. But I saw someone tweet about it. I was like, okay, I'll check it out. They tweeted about one specific episode. I was like, okay, that looks cool. I need a new animated series. Started watching it and very quickly felt so comfortable, was really enjoying myself. Did you?
Well, I just looked up 7 episodes. The 7th episode is out now, so I'm guessing it's still coming out weekly.
Yes.
Like it would have come out, yeah, as of recording yesterday.
Yeah, yep. Cool, awesome. Yeah, so I just was very comfortable straight off the bat. Was laughing not as much as I do in Rick and Morty,
sure,
but at the same time I was like, well, this is the first season. Like they're just playing with the genre itself before we really dive into the stuff that I really enjoy about Rick and Morty is how they use that stuff within that genre to play with character. And we don't really know the characters all that well yet.
Yep.
But I have no doubt they have the capabilities to do that. So, I would recommend.
The half episode I've seen, the thing that hits you over the head is similar sort of comedy stylings to Rick and Morty. Mm-hmm. The voice actors sound similar because Justin Roiland is doing a very Rickish impression in one of the main characters, well, I noticed. Yes, it's sci-fi sort of tomfoolery in the same vein of Rick and Morty. So it's got that going for it. But yeah, what I watched, I was like, oh yeah, this is funny too.
Yeah.
I was like, cool, that's plenty.
Yes.
I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I think if you're kind of twiddling your thumbs waiting for the next season of Rick and Morty to come out, this is a really good way to spend your time.
Cool. It's pretty.
And even if you haven't watched Rick and Morty and that looks a bit too full on, well, this show has just started, so you can jump on this one.
The thing about Rick and Morty as well is Rick and Morty is just the way it expands exponentially in its ideas and its concepts. Like, I wonder if they can keep this a little more reined in.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, that's the idea. It's like, oh, we got a little bit big with that show. Mm-hmm. It's expanding faster than we can manage. Let's try and keep this one down.
Yeah.
Anything else you've been watching?
That's it.
Oh, that was on Disney Plus, by the way.
It was, yes.
In fact, it's part of the new Star section for people outside the US. Mm-hmm. You guys just get this on Disney Plus, plus Hulu, I think. Mm. And then, yeah, this is what we get in the UK, Australia, New Zealand, etc. We should note that in between recording sessions, some late breaking news.
Yes.
Jessica Walters of Arrested Development and Archer fame has passed away at the age of 80, I think it was.
Yeah, R.I.P.
Which is very, very sad news. Mm. She was I keep saying, goddamn pistol. Like, she was so good all the way through. For me, my introduction to her was really Arrested Development.
Mine too,
As Lucille Bluth.
But we rewatched the first episode last night.
Yeah.
And just from the first line, just absolutely nails that character.
Yeah.
Pitch perfect. So fabulous.
Just brilliant. And like, is one of the highlights. You could, like, it's one of the things, one of those shows, Arrested Development, where it's like, who's my favorite character in that show? And everyone's so well defined and so funny in their own way. Mm-hmm. But you could just as easily be Lucille and you would be, yep, yeah. Legit. Hard not to
say
that.
Yeah, I think she is probably, I think she's got the greatest, some of the greatest lines.
And delivery.
And that's the thing. Like, and the that expression, dry, the timing. Kind of, yeah. I think she's definitely, if not my favorite, like top two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Someone on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was, unfortunately, so I can't give them their due here, but someone said, tomorrow banana should be $10 in her honor. I thought that seemed fitting.
Absolutely. Yeah, because we were chatting about this last night, and you were saying that, you know, out of, you know, older actors who pass away, this one probably hits you a little more than a few others, and we're having a chat about that. I think I said that, you know, a lot of when an old actor dies, particularly because they're not, you know, in our age range. Mm-hmm. So we have that kind of nostalgic affection for them. But with her, it was like we first saw her when we were, what, 14, 15?
Yeah, I was in like high school.
Yeah. And it was like this great new show. So we have this contemporary affection for her. Like she is so current to us.
Yeah.
For her to leave, it feels... yeah, really strange.
That's a good way of putting it, because even if you came by, say, like, for instance, Christopher Plummer, who died recently as well, I paid him as well, I came by him through The Sound of Music and stuff like that. So obviously I was a kid, like I have nostalgia for that, but it was a nostalgia for a younger version of Christopher Plummer. That's not to say he hasn't been great in his older years either. Mm. He was great in like Knives Out and stuff like that, but Jessica Walters, I came by at this part of her career, basically.
Yeah.
Like, as far as, like, she was still doing Archer and stuff. Like, she was still going. And, like, Christopher Plummer was too. But, yeah, it is a little different attachment, funnily enough.
Well, I mean, this is more about my brain. But when Christopher Plummer died, and it was like, what a brilliant career, and showed all his, everything he'd done, I didn't associate young Christopher Plummer with old Christopher Plummer.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because I just, like, when I watch Sound of Music, I don't picture what that man looks like as an old man.
I was
going to
say, I don't think he looks the same. It's like sometimes people, like, you can like see that steep progression. I'm like, him in Sound of Music and him by the time he's in Knives Out, I'm like, where was the connection? I'm missing the middle evolution in the Pokemon line. I don't understand how that we got here.
I also think like with conversation, Maggie Smith, she has always seemed old to me.
100%.
And so I think I'll feel the same way like when she passes away, like as I did to Jessica Walters.
That is something that's really funny. It's not funny, but interesting about the Maggie Smith thing though, because she was aged up makeup wise in Hook, which is when I first came by Maggie Smith. And then she got younger.
Yeah, then I see her in First Wives Club and stuff like that. I'm like, it took me ages to realize I was the same woman from Hook and First Wives Club.
Yeah. Yeah, and now, like, she's, probably getting close to what she was like in in Hook now. Some stuff I've been watching. I won't dwell on some of these too long. In fact, some of these are just updates. I'm into the final season of Mad Men, which is exciting. It's only taken me over a year to get here. But, like, watching an episode or two.
I mean, that's not old. Like, that's not anything new for us, though.
To take this long.
Takes so long to finish the season.
And the thing is, like, we'll watch an episode here or there, maybe a couple of weeks, Steph and I. But then I've got to watch all the stuff we're doing for the podcast around it. So getting a consistent flow has been hard, but really enjoying it. And one thing I really liked in the last episode recently, and nothing spoilerish here, but earlier on, I think between season 3 and 4, I said I love there was a big status quo shift. And coming into this last season, there's been another one. And I'm just like, I love when a show does this, understands how to just move the furniture a little bit to get some different dynamics and stuff happening, to push some characters into different positions, to make some new sort of tension start to arise. So I'm really enjoying that. I'm looking forward to watching the rest of that. I've been dabbling with Disney Plus and the new Star Channel side of things. One of Steph's favorite shows is Bob's Burgers, the animated series, but that has been hard to find in Australia. It sort of comes out in dribs and drabs here and there. And so when it arrived on Disney Plus, like every season up to date, I'm pretty sure. Maybe not the very latest season yet, but the vast majority of it, and there are multiple seasons, like 10 or 12 seasons, something like that now. She was able to sort of catch her way back up to where she was, and I've started watching it with her. It's a very good, like, wind down after dinner sort of show. Just watch 22 minutes of something that's really quite fun. What I'm loving about it is I often, everyone, especially people from our generation, sad that The Simpsons sort of has not continued to be as great as it was. Mm-hmm. It's been fun on Disney Plus to go back and watch early seasons and remember the heart that show had before it started to just shove different celebrities into every episode yeah. and have Homer hit his head a lot. Although he was doing that a little bit earlier as well. But and then Family Guy always sort of seemed to run with the satiristic, over-the-top humor part of The Simpsons.
Extended gags.
Extended gags and stuff like that. But it didn't necessarily, again, find the heart, the family heart stuff that I always loved about The Simpsons when you revisit it. Bob's Burgers is that. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily always as laugh out loud funny, though I laugh a lot watching Bob's Burgers.
I do as well, yeah.
But most importantly, I just think I really like that family dynamic and they nailed that side of things. There was an episode recently about one of Bob's birthdays where Linda forgets his birthday and is trying to come up with a surprise party to make up for it or something. And the resolution at the end of it was just genuinely so sweet. I was like, oh, this is lovely.
Yeah.
I really, really like this show. And this is like season 8 or something like this. So I'm going to have to go back and watch the whole thing from the beginning, I think. Bit like I have to do that with Broad City still. Mm. And I've seen probably 50% of that show. And there's not heaps and heaps, but I'll get to it eventually. But yeah, Bob's Burgers is really, really good. Mm. And I've been sleeping on that one. So that was a mistake.
Yeah, I've seen maybe the first 4 seasons of Bob's Burgers. Mm-hmm. And then, but like you said, in Australia, it was really hard to get hold of.
Yeah.
So once you're not thinking about it regularly, then you just kind of forget about it. But I've actually started watching it again from the start as well. Yeah.
Nice. I think there's a new show from the creators as well, Great North or Great White North or something like that. It's got Nick Offerman and some other people in it.
I think I remember reading about that, but I haven't watched it.
I've just recently started. I'm not sure if we can find that on Disney Plus here or where that's hiding. Just out of interest, as I was scanning through Disney Plus also, I decided to watch the first episode of a show called Dog with a Blog. I don't know if you've ever heard of Dog with a Blog.
Amazingly enough, I have not. No.
It's just, you know, one of those Disney Channel style sitcom shows.
Mm-hmm.
The difference here being that their family has a dog that can talk.
Cool.
I don't know why I decided to watch this pilot.
Yeah, I'm waiting for an explanation,
Brad. I only made it halfway through, but the reason I bring it up is because it's possibly one of the most... It's from like early 2010s, I think it started or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little bit earlier. And the facial animation on the dog to make him talk is utterly terrifying. It's not just that the mouth movements, it's the ridiculously over-the-top eyebrow movements they somehow make him do to make him have an expression. It's really unsettling. So fabulous. If you're looking for something just to like give you nightmares, I'd recommend watching the pilot of Dog with a Blog on Disney Plus.
Are you okay, Brad? What's going on at home?
Something we did go and see though, and you can also check this out on Disney Plus, the premium thing you pay extra for it, is Raya and the Last Dragon.
I forgot that we'd seen that. Yeah,
we saw that at the cinemas a couple of weeks ago.
We did.
This is the new Disney animated, 3D animated feature, starring Kelly Marie Tran. And it is sort of based on Southeast Asian like culture and myths. It's about this young woman who's got to repair the world and bring it back together by getting these individual pieces of a crystal. And there's a whole backstory and thing to it. I would say if you're a fan of Avatar Last Airbender or Korra, The Legend of Korra, you're going to find some of this stuff familiar plot-wise at the very least.
And just design-wise as
Design-wise, there were a few things I was like, is that a nod? Or are you just
I was
genuinely
confused. I'm like,
off
is that
Korra?
A nice little like, we see you? Or is it just someone who hasn't... Yeah, anyway.
It's more of an action film. It's not a musical like other Disney animated films have been recently. So it's more close to a Pixar film in that regard, I guess. How'd you find it?
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it at all?
No. As soon as it finished, I was like, I feel like they came up with a theme and then I feel like they had a story and then they smacked a theme on top of it.
Sure.
Because this story is in great conflict with the theme they're trying to shove down your throat.
Sure. I recently watched an honest trailer from the guys at Film Junkie, whoever that one, those guys are. Anyway, the honest trailer for Raya the Last Dragon, it's very spoilery, so if you haven't seen the film, you might not want to watch it.
Mm.
But it did a really good job, I thought, of summarizing our general problems with it, which just thematically, it does not match up what happens on screen, what the actual events take place,
yes,
and the theme
and the lesson learned. And the lesson learned. It's like, that doesn't make any sense.
Everything you're telling me is contradictory to that lesson.
Yes.
Which I find a little bit frustrating.
Mm. I also think it's a shame that I didn't think, anyway, that because obviously like almost like a road trip film. And so with that, you need the two leads to have really great chemistry.
Yep.
And I don't believe that they did.
But the two leads being Kelly Aquafina and Kimmy Tran. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's obviously probably being recorded in isolation or like in certain circumstances, perhaps. Yep. So they can't bounce off each other.
Yep.
But I thought it was a real shame because I like both of them, but together those characters just, I don't know, didn't work for me together as a unit.
There's a lot of things about it's like it's they're backhanded compliments. It's like it was beautiful in a lot of respects, but sometimes I found like we weren't spending enough time in places to really get a feel for one place or another. Mm-hmm. It was like the world was, yeah, obviously beautiful, but I don't know. I didn't connect with it as much as I thought I would. Some of the stuff that I take for granted, I think, with Disney animated films just wasn't happening. And I mostly believe it's just because there's seemingly a lot of plot. The villains are... like the bad guy, the supernatural bad guy elements are really boring in their design and stuff. We don't get to connect with this more bigger ensemble cast in any way. It was trying to be funny and I didn't find it funny really at any point. I think I maybe sniggered once. Like that was about it.
I don't think I laughed at all.
Yeah.
So I remember you saying that as we were driving home and I was like, what did you laugh at?
I thought the action was good and there was like there were sometimes they do like a shot or like a setup would be really, really good. But I don't know. It just didn't all really come together in a way that I thought was particularly satisfying.
I was disappointed. I was really looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
I think I'll just rewatch Dragon Prince.
Yeah, rewatch Dragon Prince or Avatar or like, I'm just trying to think of other Disney animated films I've seen recently. I think I enjoyed Moana a lot more. I definitely enjoyed Zootopia a lot more. Like those were much stronger for me than Raya was. So sort of in how this goes for, if you're looking for something to go to the cinemas with your kids with, this would actually probably be a good time.
That's
not
true.
Going to have a bad time doing it.
I reckon kids will really like the adventure.
I reckon though, if you've got Disney Plus and you're thinking, do I pay $30 to watch this at home? Maybe wait a couple of months until it's free on the service. I don't think you need to rush out, which has actually been the case so far with everything they've released that way on Disney Plus. Between
for you,
I haven't paid for any of them yet because none of them have ended up being good enough.
I did for Mulan as soon as it came out because I was so excited, and we were in the middle of our really intense lockdown. I was like, "Fuck yeah, new film!" I love Mulan the animated series, but that obviously didn't work out well for me. So major regrets.
You're the reason I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah.
I also watched Assembled: The Making of WandaVision, which is the little documentary on the making of Marvel's WandaVision on Disney Plus. Cute. Not all that insightful, ultimately. It was fun to sort of see them enjoying themselves doing the stuff in front of a live studio audience in episode one in particular. What it meant to sort of try and recreate those sets and costumes and the music in particular I thought was really fun. They had the composers talking a lot about making the different theme songs for the episodes and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's fun. It's cute and a good time if you really enjoyed the show. And you just want to spend a bit more time with Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen. I think you're probably going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I thought they might, you know, throw a few little, like, discuss some of the more controversial elements or interesting. I think they wanted to actually avoid spoilers in a big way, that sort of stuff. So discussions we get with certain actors that I won't name for spoiler reasons are very brief. And like there's not much there beyond just, oh, cool, they had a good time making this and it looks like it was a lot of fun and this is the craft that went into it a little bit. So that's a good time if you're looking for that. I also watched a new documentary series on Amazon Prime called Making Their Mark, which if you're a long-time listener of the show, you know I'm a massive fan of the Richmond Tigers in the Australian sport of AFL, Australian Rules Football. And this is a 7-episode, hour-long episodes documentary series on Amazon all about the AFL 2020 season. It follows.
That's more interesting than what I was expecting.
Sure. It follows 6 different groups, essentially. There's 18 teams in the AFL. So, obviously, listen, just scroll ahead in the thing 5 minutes if you're not into sport or AFL.
It's like with me in Reality Check. It's fine.
Sure.
People will skip.
Aussie rules football for people who are international is a very different game. You don't see it anywhere else in the world. So, it's a great little introduction to the sport, I think, as well. But it follows people from 6 different teams of the 18 teams that play, including the sort of leadership group of the Richmond Tigers, who are my team. And obviously, it was a very interesting season because right as the season was starting, like literally the week of round one, COVID restrictions started hitting in Australia. This is in March last year. And all of a sudden, there was no crowds at the first round. They played the first round, but there were no crowds in any of the stadiums. Mm-hmm. And then after round one, we went on hiatus for like 2 or 3 months before we came back and they reshaped the whole season and sort of made it all happen by pretty much pushing the whole league into one state in Queensland and just keeping them in these hotel bubbles, and then making them play each other in mostly in one state, and then had the final series up there, which never happens. It always happens in our home state of Victoria at the MCG. And so if nothing else, if you're not even into football, it was just interesting to sort of be reminded of how this all started. So like the first episode in particular, when COVID, it's almost like a whisper in the background of COVID, right? And people are talking about it and everyone's got an opinion on it. Everyone's like, oh, everyone will just get it and, you know, it'll affect a few people, but, you know, it's most people like will be fine. Flu. It'll just be a cold or whatever. Very intelligent, respectable people whose opinions and understanding changes later because they understand it better.
Yeah.
You hear them saying stupid things now. If you heard someone saying it, you'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
But we didn't know any better.
Yeah,
and then
true.
Discussion of like, oh, this will just be 6 weeks. You know, we'll be back to this soon. It'll be fine. Mm. And then like, it was very... it was really helped me to return back to what that felt like at the time. It was actually quite emotional, the first episode. But there's lots of other things that get talked about in there. Eddie Betts is a prolific player in the AFL. He plays for the Carlton Blues. He's known as probably the most popular player in the AFL. He's also an Indigenous Australian, and him was having to deal with some racist bullshit, which seems to happen every season, talking about that experience.
In this racist country? What are you talking about?
Who would have thought, huh? Having to deal with... having to leave their families for extended periods to play a sport and whether that's a good thing or not. Like, all sorts of things like that are in there. It's very fond of the sport. So, if you want something that's a little bit more critical of the, you know, the bad side of the sport, you might not find it here. But I had a really good time with it.
Do I have to see Eddie McGuire's face at all?
I don't think you do, actually.
Oh, thank God.
If it's they don't follow Collingwood at all, so you don't see him. If you do, it's very brief. But I don't remember. It was not following him directly. It was interesting conversations on leadership and resilience and all sorts of good stuff in there. And you get to see how my beloved team went on to win 2 flags in a row and overcome the odds to have the last episode, the last 30 minutes is just like porn for me. Just the behind the scenes footage of like halftime addresses from the coach. You know, we're down by a few goals. We're sort of got beaten up in the second quarter and watching him address the team. And I think the funny thing was when that game happened, there are people I know who are involved with the club in different ways I was talking to on Twitter. And they were saying, just wait for this documentary. Cause I know the camera crew was in the, in the rooms during that thing. And everyone's like, I can't wait to see the spray that Dimmer gives me. He's going to rip through them. And the talk he gives them is so not that. It's great stuff. If you're into sports doco stuff,
you're
just curious about AFL, if you're an AFL fan, I definitely recommend checking it out.
That actually reminds me, just in terms of watching things that were occurring in 2020.
Yes.
Like Drag Race UK has a great episode where they kind of talk to the queens at home.
Yeah.
And like they obviously were told to keep filming themselves during their lockdown and stuff. And it was just like, at first I was like, oh, do I really want to watch COVID stuff? But it was a nice little reminder of like how weird it all felt at the very beginning. Yeah.
In fact, one of the really interesting and heartbreaking moments in the series is when Brendan Gale, the president of Richmond, is having to, because he's one of the only really leadership groups they follow, he's having to make decisions about like laying people off.
Yeah.
Because without crowds, there's no revenue and they need to keep the club afloat, and so they have to like halve their staff in some ways.
Jeez.
And like you see him at the end of a Zoom call where he's basically telling people they don't have jobs anymore, and like just how hard you can, like, we don't get to see their reactions, those people, because obviously it's a private thing.
Yeah,
but that's not easy for him. You're like, he's built this team around him, he's close with his staff and stuff, you imagine, and having to tell them they don't have, like, things like that.
I suppose that was before JobKeeper was announced and stuff.
It wasn't necessarily like they may have been getting JobKeeper, but they didn't have their other roles anymore. Like whole things. Anyway, you might find it interesting. You might find it inherently boring. I'm not sure.
What platform was that?
That's on,
Amazon.
Amazon Prime. Yeah, I believe it's available internationally. Mm-hmm. I don't see why it wouldn't be. Taskmaster Series 11 has started. I've only watched the first episode so far. We've got some new contestants there. Would I Lie to You co-host Lee Mack, Fresh Meat actor Charlotte Ritchie, stand-up comedian Jamali Maddox, Man Down actor Mike Mozniak, and Australian comedian Sarah Kendall. First episode was very good.
I'm going to watch that this morning. Thank you for the recommendation.
That's all right. There'll be two episodes out now. In fact, I need to watch the second episode myself.
I'll wait to watch the second with you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. They need to do a lot to tell me to impress me they're better than last season, because I still love Series 10 so much. I started rewatching
that. I need to watch that. Okay.
So good. But I'm particularly impressed with, I didn't know Mike Mozniak. Yeah, I believe that's his name. He instantly, I think, is very funny just a lot of fun to watch.
Cool.
If you're into Taskmaster, know that Series 11 has started. There was also a special New Year's episode that was a bit of fun too. It had, who's the main actress from Derry Girls?
I don't know her name, sorry.
Neither do I, but she was one of the contestants. It was just a fun little one-off and it was cute. It was a nice way to start the new year, that's for sure. Finally, you and I sat down to watch the long-awaited...
Is it happening?
The fabled it is.
Are we talking about it?
We are. Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Oh,
release,
my God.
Hashtag release the Snyder
Cut. It has been released.
The Kraken has been released. Mm-hmm. It's out there. It's one of those things I really assumed was never going to happen. You know, I still think it was fabled. The fact that they had to invest...
I still think of it as a hilarious joke.
The fact they had to invest $70 million+ to get this thing finished suggests there was no finished or final cut. In fact, the way we get the cut suggests it was at best an assemble cut of some sort.
Yes. When people said it didn't exist, it's because it didn't fucking exist.
I mean, obviously he shot a lot of stuff. He probably had assembly cuts made.
Yeah.
But that was it.
Yes.
And like, it was a tragedy what happened. And in terms of what happened with his family,
yes,
and he left the project. And it's obvious that DC wanted any excuse to get rid of him because they wanted to change the direction of DCEU and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a fan of the campaign to get it, this Snyder Cut, released. There was a lot of toxicity around it.
Yeah.
In a weird...
Man babies having a big tantrum.
Yeah, entitled, abusive, all sorts of things. However, there were legitimate people who were not like that who wanted to see what this was.
That's true.
And now that it's out, there is no doubt that it is at least a curiosity to be able to see what the general idea... Again, this movie, when you watch it, does not represent what the movie we got in cinemas was.
No, not at all.
There's no way that's true. It resembles in a lot of ways, but there's no way this would have been the final version.
This four-hour thing? No.
Definitely not. But it does give you a general idea of what the tone and what it would have looked like in a very broad sense compared to what we got from 2017 once they got Joss Whedon onto it and then reduced its runtime to 2 hours or just under. You haven't watched the original Justice League from 2017, have you?
No, never was interested.
No. What'd you make of then? Oh, but you had seen, Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman?
Yes.
And what did you think of those two films?
Man of Steel, I was like, this is not a good Superman film. I'm not enjoying it.
Sure.
But I was like, some people seem to get a kick out of it, whatever. I don't like this dark and broody thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, whatever, some people really like that. I mean, I also just don't really like Nolan's Batman either.
Sure.
But I think they're good films. I just don't like that type of superhero.
Sure.
Don't find them interesting. So I was like, oh, that's fine, whatever, just not for me. That's all good. And then I watched Batman v Superman, and I was like, this is one of the worst, if not the worst superhero film in recent times, superhero film I've ever seen.
It's truly awful. I stand by that to this day.
Yeah, it is an absolute mess.
If I apply my brain to it for a second, I'm instantly reminded of so many awful choices.
Yes, agreed.
Awful choices.
Like,
throughout.
I just... You know, if I don't like something, I can often be like, I don't like it for very personal reasons.
Sure.
Doesn't mean that those who do like it are wrong. But I think those who like Batman v Superman are wrong. I think it's just a really badly put together film.
Well, I'll put it this way. I think you can like Batman v Superman I think it's very hard to argue.
That obviously, it's a good
everything,
film.
Everything yeah. is subjective, but I think it's very hard to argue that it's a good movie. There are bad films that I like, if that makes sense. Mm.
But do you understand that they're bad, though?
Yes.
It's the people who don't understand that they're bad and just like, no, this is.
I don't want to be that patronizing, but I truly believe it is a bad movie.
It is a bad movie.
Yeah.
It is very bad. So that were my opinions of those films. But I knew DC was doing something very different. I thought a lot of what they're doing felt really rushed and messy.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that in the future, if the story felt right, if the story made sense and it was a good film, that I wouldn't just jump back right on board again and be like, okay, well, now I'm into DC stuff. But that just hasn't happened yet.
So, having only seen those first two films and not seen the original Justice League.
And obviously, I quite enjoyed Wonder Woman except for the third act.
Right.
Yeah.
How did you find Zack Snyder's Justice League?
I've written a little thing. Can I just...
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so it wasn't as bad as I was expecting. Because obviously, I had I had my opinions at the beginning about perhaps how bad it was going to be. And you and I watched it together because I thought, well, this is going to be hilarious because it's going to be so, so bad. And that's not what happened.
No.
It really wasn't close to how bad I expected it to be.
It's definitely better than Batman versus Superman.
Yeah. I thought the film was fine. There is no excuse that it should be a four-hour film. It was clearly was originally intended to be a shortcut to create a team without having to dedicate years and multiple films to building characters, which is hilarious because ultimately that's what they've had to do anyway. The sad thing is it's so long and not good enough to justify how long it is that I just don't think I'll ever rewatch it.
No, that's one of the things that's interesting about this too, is the chances of me rewatching this ever. The funny thing, I actually have scrubbed through it a couple of times to check out particular scenes because I've been absorbing a lot of other people talking about it too because it's such a curiosity from a pop culture perspective that I'm interested in what people's sort of feelings about it are. But I can never see myself watching the entire thing again. It's too unwieldy and long for that.
Absolutely. All right. So one point I just wrote was like, I thought the cyborg stuff was good, and I can see why Snyder would be upset that they cut.
And Ray Fisher.
Yeah, it's like a really central part to what he clearly wanted to do with the film, and I think it's pretty important, obviously, to his vision.
Sure.
So I'm glad they had the opportunity to put all that cyborg stuff in there. I also enjoyed the Flash stuff as well. In fact, I think his scenes with his dad are the few that have any recognizable and relatable human emotion to them.
Sure.
So I thought they were really important. I thought there were some really nice performances in those scenes with Flash and his dad. And I think I was like, you know, slightly emotional in quite a few of them. I thought they were really good. Unfortunately, though, I still had many moments of picking apart the logic to a character's actions, which makes the movie, to me, not good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it makes me feel, if I'm watching a film and I'm picking apart the logic and not wanting to, but it's right there on the surface to be like, why is that happening?
Mm-hmm.
When I'm doing that, it makes me feel, and this probably isn't accurate, but it makes me feel like I have thought about character motivation more than the creators have.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre considering how much time and attention this cut of the film has had and its different iterations as well.
Sure.
Like it's bizarre to me that there are still huge logic flaws in this film that has been given so much time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the 4 hour, this version compared to, especially when you compare it to the 2017 version, it almost feels closer to a Lord of the Rings epic.
Yeah.
It's going for something more like that. And in some places it achieves that, I think. I can see if that was the vision to make it feel grand and epic in that scale and they were building this series over 5 films that were apparently planned in Snyder's head to get us to that place. I can sort of see what they were doing.
Mm.
The problem is what they forget in Lord of the Rings is so successful at is the character work is so good, which is why the rest of it works. That's the bit it just never gets close to. Although, I agree with you that Cyborg and Flash get a pretty decent shake of it in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are lots of bits of this that I think were more successful. Some of the action was more successful. I actually don't think it's a particularly good-looking film. He has an eye for, framing and spectacle and those sorts of things, But a lot of the time I was left going, that actually is an ugly, ugly frame. Maybe some of it is that because they're coming at it late, the money they're putting towards it from a visual effects perspective is not there and it doesn't
quite
reach it.
Have you seen all that stuff about the black and white cut?
There's a black and white cut coming as well. It's apparently going to have potentially another version of the ending scene.
Apparently that was his original intention, to have it in black and white.
Yeah, this is what I mean, though. Mm. Okay, let's talk about this for a second. The 4x3 framing is absurd. And it is the best expression of what is wrong with this movie, in that it is hilarious. Indulgent beyond the point. So, let me put it this way.
It's starting to feel, not this bad, but a little George Lucas-y, in which he just kind of is getting everything he wants, and sometimes he just shouldn't.
However, the argument is that this is not the theatrical release. This is a director's cut specifically to indulge the director,
that's
right?
True.
And so we do have to give it some leeway that that's what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's giving the fans what they wanted, which is Zack Snyder's vision and all of it, apparently. The epilogue is terrible. If you watch the movie, I would suggest just not watching any of it because it is totally absurd and awful and almost ruins the movie just by existing. It doesn't make any sense being there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the climactic battle is in some ways better, in a lot of ways better than it was in the original. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that will always be wrong about what... the problem probably it was always that from inception, Zack Snyder was never the person to shepherd this series through... if they were trying to create a cinematic universe.
Mm.
His instincts on Batman and Superman specifically are fucking awful. They are awful.
Mm.
And I understand the idea that's like, oh, let someone else have a different version of it. But I just don't think he understands the characters on any sort of human level to make them an interesting version of these sorts of alternate versions.
Yeah,
that
we don't
got.
Really get a real version of either of them. Like, there's
but we've
so
had three movies.
Yeah, there's so little there, which is shocking.
Yeah. Mm. I'll put it this way. I rewatched the 2017 version after we watched this Zack Snyder version as well. And that movie is super flawed in so many ways. It is trying to take what is like 50%+ of... most of the film is Zack Snyder's original stuff with very specific scenes and shots peppered in from Joss Whedon to sort of patch holes and add some levity and humor and stuff in there.
Mm.
And it doesn't work because the film was never originally shot to be that way. In fact, it wasn't incepted that way from Man of Steel through Batman vs. Superman. So it's this hodgepodge of very different tones that doesn't come together.
Yeah.
But there are some things about the theatrical version that instinctually, because I think... whatever you think about Joss Whedon, at least as a writer, he understands basic, like, how to create an arc, how to create a three-act structure, how to bring things better in a thematic way, much better. And instinctually, he's able to go, well, that thing wasn't working. It's a patchwork way of doing it, but I'm going to make this thing happen a little bit differently to at least make it feel earned in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stuff like that happens.
Yeah.
That I, while the execution is not as good and Joss Whedon is nowhere near as visually interesting as Zack Snyder is, his instincts are right. And so what you have are two very flawed films with 6 hours of footage, some of it shared, but, you know, somewhere around the 5-hour mark of footage, that someone who is much better than both of these... someone who's got the talent could direct, I think, a very good Justice League film in there. Maybe not a very good
That's what we need, another cut.
But a good one. No, but dead set, though.
Yeah.
If you take the good stuff from the theatrical release and the good stuff from the Zack Snyder cut and take away the excess rubbish in both of them, get rid of some of the awful jokes from the original, get rid of... the 4x3 aspect ratio and choices on, like, costume colors and stuff, for instance. Like, just things like that, the excess rubbish, you would have, I think, a pretty good Justice League movie in there.
Can I just say on the epilogue, I don't understand why it's attached to this film, but in concept, I'm excited by the idea. If that was the film... I'd probably check that one out. But in terms of it being a part of this film, I just like, haven't you spent enough money? Why are we shooting this?
Yeah, I don't hate the idea.
Mm.
I don't like the way they're getting there, or the just that scene at the end. which wasn't even like that is something that Zack Snyder has now done. He's gone back and reshot that as like a gift to the fans to say, I wanted these characters to meet in my films at some stage. I'm not going back to this universe anymore, although now there's a hashtag for reboot or restate the Snyderverse or whatever it is. Great. That they filmed it for the sake of filming it as like a preview of what might have come, but what we get, it's nonsensical and awful. It's the best example of the indulgence.
Yeah.
Again, which you might forgive them for because this is, again, a pop culture curiosity. It's just an insight into the mind of a director who wasn't able to get the film he envisioned made, was taken away from him and then chopped to bits. And people who were invested in that universe wanted to see that, and fair enough. I'm glad for them, especially the ones who weren't dicks about it. And as a from someone who's interested in film, it's a very interesting thing to watch once. There's no fucking way I'm ever going to watch it again. Mm-hmm. Not from start to finish anyway. Yeah. Any other thoughts on that?
Absolutely not.
Good. We're done. Thanks for listening to this episode of Off Topic Hot Topic. We'll be back next week with our review of Succession Season 1.
Woohoo!
Catch you later.
Bye.